Welcome to Guitar Radio Show, the show dedicated to the guitar player, guitar maker, gear builder, and purveyors of such items that you may not know about, but should.
Folks, welcome back to another episode of Guitar Radio Show. Our next guest, to me, falls in line with, to me, the future of blues and blues rock. The next logical place that we're going with that genre. Like his contemporaries, Gary Clark Jr., Joe Bonamassa, Josh Smith, Alistair Green, people like this, I think are going to be the people that are going to take this genre to the next logical place. And I can't think of anybody better to do this than our next guest. I've gotten to see our next guest play a bunch of times. Most recently was last May at the Dallas Guitar Festival, where he did a ripping set, and he paid tribute to my favorite guitar player of all times, Jeff Beck. Which I thought was really cool. So please welcome to Guitar Radio Show, Mr. Artur Menezes. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you, Mark? Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for being here. You really surprised me and delighted me when I saw you in Dallas. And that was the second or third time I think I'd seen you. I know I saw you at Crossroads for sure. And that was excellent, just really great. And but then you went ahead and you delighted me by playing a little snippet of Blue Wind in your set at at what you call it. Now everybody knows ad nauseum around here how much of a Jeff Beck nut I am. Are you a big Jeff Beck fan?
I am. I think he's if not the biggest, but definitely one of the biggest all time. And the way that he used to play was very unique. It's nobody plays like him. I mean, there's some players that took a lot from him, but also took to another level as well, like Scott Henderson. He's a great player.
Yeah.
He has he got a lot from Jeff Beck. But I think in terms of being like unique and creativity and coming up with something new, Jeff Beck was really something else, you know?
Yeah. We just had Scott on. He's got a new record out called Carnival. And if you haven't heard it, it's wow, it's marvelous. It's
really yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. So what do you think about the state of blues and blues rock, the genre that you reside in? What do you think of the health and well-being of it right now?
What I think it needs to be renovated somehow. We need some kind of renew, because what I noticed is, and you probably did the same, it's the audience is not really renewing. I mean, we see some younger players and great players and great artists, just like Kingfish, you know, he's very young, amazing. But the fans, like the audience, is not really renewing. You see, like, okay, we need to bring like young blood, we need to do that. And I think to be able to do that, we need to do some kind of innovation or mix with other stuff.
Yeah.
So, but at the same time, I think the traditional artists, they're very important because they keep the blues alive and, you know, they keep the history and everything. Mm-hmm. So we have to have those two teams working side by side to make the blues keep going, you know? But I also hear the, you know, a lot of people, like, they are the blues police, and they say, oh, this is not blues, this is blues. And all the time that I hear that, I just give the example of Muddy Waters and Little Walter. Because, right. Yeah, because at the time, everybody was playing, you know, like, more of acoustic stuff.
Yeah.
Or, and then when they moved to Chicago, the big cities, with electricity and everything, and more people in the bar.
Right.
So you had to play louder. What they did was just, you know, Little Walter grab a guitar amplifier, you know, plug his harmonica and did something different for that time. Muddy Waters the same. Mm-hmm. And that's what we kind of consider blues, traditional blues nowadays. But at the time it was like something completely modern. Nobody was doing that kind of stuff. So I think at the time probably somebody had the same kind of thinking, you know, saying, oh, this isn't blues, this is not right.
Right.
But then it became. So I think maybe we are in this place in the history of music that we are already innovating, but a lot of people, they don't see it yet. But maybe in some years they're going to see, oh, okay, this is also blues. You know, this is, you know, just like hip hop, it's also blues,
right.
R&B or rap. You know, it's everything comes from the blues, basically. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. We actually just said that off mic. Before we got started, we were saying, you know, I was telling you how I'm classically trained in guitar and voice and piano, but I'd never used any of it. And you said, well, it's all still 1-4-5, you know.
Yeah.
And you're right. You're right. You're totally right when you say that. It's absolutely true. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. I mean, I think what you've done with AMFM, which was, now correct me if I'm wrong, was this a series of singles throughout 2023 and then became an EP in September, although it was all recorded at the same time?
Yes, yes. It was all recorded actually at the end of the pandemic. I think it was at the end of 2021.
Right.
But I got signed by this label, Black Hill Records.
Right.
And which is a great label. It's a great label. They have a lot of great artists like Jerry James Nichols, The Coat, and, you know, they're very good. But when you work with a label, things go to the next level, but go super slow. When I was doing everything by myself, it was way faster. So when we released those singles, I'm already like, okay, I liked it. It's great songs and everything, but I'm already somewhere else.
Yeah, you're onto something else.
I'm not in that moment anymore. Yeah.
I really like the idea of the title, and not everybody really knows the title, the whole thing about the title. The AM is you.
Yeah.
And the FM is Fuzz Machine, because you used fuzz on every single track on the EP.
Yeah.
And I thought that was super cool. And your use of fuzz, albeit that it is has this flavor of traditional, you know, electric blues fuzz kind of a thing, you're also, it's interesting, I noticed the voicing of what you're playing, the way the notes that you're choosing isn't your run-of-the-mill blues or your run-of-the-mill rock blues. It is you're infusing something else in there, almost like a fusion to me. Mm-hmm. Was that a conscious effort on your part, or was that more along the lines of, this is just what's coming out of me?
Yeah, it's natural, but it becomes developing over the years.
Yeah,
I think it's just when we started to feel more comfortable and understand that there's nothing wrong if you want to fit in some kind of box. And there's nothing wrong with that, you know. You can play traditional blues, you can play rock, heavy metal, and you want to be there. It's awesome. But at the same time, I like so many things.
Yeah.
You know, not only the blues. I love a lot of Brazilian music, and, you know, funk, soul, a lot of hard rock stuff. Like AC/DC was my first and favorite rock band that I ever heard. So those things, they just came naturally. They just came naturally. And it's more about being more comfortable about, okay, it's okay if I'm not going to please everybody, or if it's okay, if it's going to be hard to say what genre I'm playing, mm-hmm. but I'm okay with that. I just want to be honest and real what I'm doing. Yeah. So it kind of came naturally.
Yeah. And it's interesting because all of the genres that you mentioned just now, they're all steeped and or are a derivative of the blues.
Yes.
Every single one of them, funk, soul, metal. And I don't care what you say. I mean, yes, there are, I mean, harmonic, you know, minor harmonic keys and stuff like that in metal, plenty of it. But, you know, you mentioned AC/DC. What is AC/DC but fuel-injected Chuck Berry?
There you go. Yeah, for me, it's a blues band with a rock drummer.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, I know that I'm a Bon Scott guy more than a Brian Johnson guy. You know, I love Brian, but I'm a Bon Scott guy because his lyrics were so Chuck Berry. Mm-hmm. You know, and of course Angus's guitar playing is. I mean, that was his guy. It was Keith Richards and Chuck Berry.
Yeah,
and who does Keith Richards get it from? So it's, you know, it all goes back. But yeah, I definitely hear on AM/FM, I hear you going to other places, and that excites me, and that's why I kind of brought up this conversation about you know, what is the health and well-being, and where, you know, because it's going to be people like you, like I said, and you know, Alistair and Gary Clark Jr., Philip Sace. These are the people I'm looking to, you know, at this point in my life. You know, I'm saying to you guys, all right, where are you going to take us? You know, when I first, I mean, I don't know about you, but first time I heard hip hop, you know, I grew up in New York, and the first time I heard hip hop, I was like, oh, this is blues. This is a new blues. Mm-hmm. You know? You know, so and I was excited by the idea, and then when it started to mix with metal, I was like, "Well, that's really interesting. That's fascinating." Yeah. So I'm wondering, you know, where are we going to go? Where are you going to take us? What kind of stuff are you writing right now?
It's always going to have the two feet on the blue in the blues.
Yeah always
but I'm just trying to work more on the lyrics, because before I was kind of just copying and pasting the style of lyrics in the blues, mm-hmm. and the content as well, mm-hmm. but as I started, like, you know, growing up and everything, there's a lot of things in the lyrics that I think it's kind of I don't know if I like that much, but of course it's part of the time that it was written and everything, so we have to understand that. But there was some stuff that I don't agree and I wasn't really connected with, and I figured out, you know, I want to talk about something, some stuff about stuff that I feel or stuff that touches me. So basically I'm more working on the lyrics, but by working on the lyrics, I'm going to start to go a little bit more, the word is not sophisticated, but when the metrics, it's a little bit more how can I say, it's less simple than the blues, mm-hmm. and then you kind of have to change the harmonies or everything else to accommodate the new lyrics, mm-hmm. so that's what's actually happening, but it's still like there's a lot of blues going on,
right?
And fuzz, as always, like fuzz pedals, like that's what I do, like 99% of my sound is when I play with fuzz, mm-hmm. And like psychedelic stuff, like very psychedelic, very jammy.
Yeah. It's funny too, because iTunes listed AM/FM as psychedelic.
Yeah,
they didn't list it as a blues or rock. I found that fascinating. I was like, wow, how about that? So, you know, I don't know if that's an algorithm or if there's somebody assigning it or what, but it's probably an algorithm. But I was like, wow, that's kind of cool. And yes, absolutely, there is there's flavor of that in there. So that's exciting to me to hear that you're thinking more going in those directions. That's exciting to me.
But, you know, on the other hand, I still love and enjoy a lot listening to the blues. And my shows, I always play like a straight slow blues or shuffle.
It has to be because
it's so good.
Yeah,
you know
that blues.
But I feel like I want to, I feel like I want to do my own thing as well. And I feel like by doing something different, I'm actually helping as well the blues community. So mm-hmm. I kind of, okay, let's do this.
Yeah. Yeah, you do one that I really like. You did it when I saw you in, I don't know if you did it at Crossroads, but you certainly did it at the Dallas show. And I think you did it at the Potato, the Blues and D Natural.
Yeah, I always play that song.
Man, that's, you know, you with a Les Paul on that is just, that's some fat stuff going on right there. It is really, really good.
Thank you.
And it makes me think about that as far as guitars and guitar choices for specific songs. For me, and I'm sure this is the same for you, you know, certain guitars push me or pull me, depending on how you look at it, in a certain direction and make me play a certain way. It's why I have so many guitars. But you know, so I've seen you play Strats, I've seen you play Les Pauls, I've seen you play your V, I've seen you play your 335.
Yeah.
So how do they push you or pull you?
Yeah, they definitely influence a lot the way I play. Let's say when I play Strat or single coils like a Tele or something like that.
Yeah.
It comes a lot of Steve Ray Vaughan.
Mm-hmm.
Because I listened to him a lot when I was a kid, and he was one of my favorites. Still is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
And I play more aggressive, like I play stronger, I pick harder, and it's more. It's like I don't care that much. It's not really precise. It's dirty. It's kind of nasty. It's a nasty way of playing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think because the instrument has less sustain than humbuckers, I also play more notes and I play faster because, you know, when you play like 335 and then you just hit a note, bend, and it sustains forever. And when you meet that feedback, and then it goes like forever. So you kind of play based on that. But here's the interesting thing. When I play 335s, I play a lot like B.B. King or not a lot like him, like nobody plays like him. I mean, comes a lot of the influences from him, and very jazzy. The playing goes very jazzy. When I go to the Flying V, it comes a lot of Albert King as well. But one thing I'm not sure, I don't know if that comes because when I play Flying V, I remember Albert King, and then I play kind of like him, like some of his phrasings and everything, or if the guitar that makes us play like that. So what I'm trying to say is, not sure if the Flying V also made Albert King play that way. So that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, you know, you're probably right. I mean, and think about it too, because Albert, he was a lefty that played with a right-handed strung guitar.
Yeah.
So he, you know, much in the same way Doyle Bramhall, the second, they're not, you know, like you and I will push up. I'm a lefty, but I string it left-handed, like Jimmy did. So, so I push up on a string, rather than pulling down. Whereas I've seen Doyle play many times here in Austin. I own one of his old Telecasters, and the wear on the fretboard is completely different.
Yeah,
you know, because of that, you know, and so I think there's that. But yeah, I think you're right. I think and what you said about the Strat and the fact that it doesn't sustain as much, that you end up playing more. I see that, and I see that. And now, and as you were saying that, I thought about all the other players who play Strats, a myriad of them, and it was they all do that. That's I never really thought about that. That's fascinating. That's fascinating. So what about the Les Paul, though? What does that do? I mean, you're talking about fat for days. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
What does that do for you?
The Les Paul, you mean?
Yeah.
It's very similar to the 335. But it comes less jazzy, and it's like it's in between the 335 and a Fender, like single coil guitar.
Yeah.
And even the Flying V, it's like if I'm talking about like going from less sustained, more aggressive playing, and more percussive to less percussive, I would say from single coils, like from Metallic, go to a Stratocaster, then goes to the Flying V, then goes to the Gibson, oh, the Les Paul, sorry, and then goes to a semi-hollow body kind of type. Because the Flying V still has like a, I don't know, it has some mids there and some things that are kind of closer to a single coil guitar, even though it's humbuckers. I don't know if it's because of the wood or...
Yeah, I think it's because of the way the wood is placed.
Yeah.
You know, and the way it resonates. I mean, Flying V's resonate so much differently than a Les Paul, but yet you've got the same, essentially you've got the same wiring going on there.
Yeah. You know? But let's say when I play like, also, I think it has to do with the tension of the strings. When I play Gibsons, I pick softer than when I play Fenders because for the length of the scale, and the strings, they are looser. So if I pick same way, it's going to go out of tune.
Yeah. That makes sense. That totally makes sense. Yeah, for sure. So we were talking, since we're in the gear place right now, and this will make a lot of people happy. You were talking about fuzzes before, and I wanted to talk about your signal chain because a couple of times that I saw you were using a vibe unit, and I don't know what it was, but it was one of the beefiest and smoothest, syrupy kind of vibe I've heard ever. What are you using as far as a vibe unit?
My favorite vibe, it's called, from Formula B. In Italy. It's a company in Italy. Now, I don't remember exactly the name of the pedal. I think it's Vibe, maybe. The company is Formula B. It's from Italy. It's my favorite one because I think almost all univibes, they sound great with overdrives, but with fuzz, not that much.
Yeah.
But that one that I have here is the one that I have sounds good with all the fuzzes I have here. But my thing is I always go with univibe before fuzz.
Right.
Yeah, that's my thing. When I put after, I don't like it.
Yep, I'm with
you. And I don't know how to explain that, like, in terms of... I just know how it feels and how it sounds. I can't go, like, into the specifications about that, you know?
Right. No, I'm totally with you on that. It's always vibe in the head of the chain. Even before... I even put it before the wah-wah.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. For me, go-to fuzz is a fuzz face. What about you?
Yeah, fuzz face. Yeah. Fuzz face.
I have heard you use some octa fuzzes. So what are you using there?
I was using for a while the one from Pedalpong, which is great because it was smaller.
Mm-hmm.
But now what I'm using is the Sugar Fuzz. But it's a big box. And I travel a lot, you know, and sometimes you want to go like with less things because it's just more convenient.
Uh-huh.
So I asked them if they could put on a smaller enclosure. So let's see what they can do. But that's the one I'm using. And I also have the one that I was using for a while as well from Beatronics. I forgot the name of the pedal. I think it's Octahive. Octahive.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah.
They make some killer fuzzes.
Yeah.
So when I saw you play in May, I don't think you brought your amp. You just flew in with guitars and pedals, right? And they had a back line for you?
Yes.
So when you're playing at home, so like when you played at the Potato, was that a back line or was that your amp?
No, I usually bring my amp when I have the chance.
Yeah.
So it's mostly two rocks, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know when you saw me playing there, if it was a two rock, or the Wagner, or
it was
Victory.
It was a two rock. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's you. That's your stuff.
Yeah, that's
okay.
My stuff.
So when I saw you at the Dallas show, you were playing out of a twin.
Yeah.
Now that's a chasm. That's like a between those two worlds. How do you find a happy medium and dial in? I mean, pedals help a lot, but
yeah,
you know
what I try to do is because you know, like you said, it's very hard to fly with amp. You know, it's gonna make everything more complicated and more expensive and everything. So I have to play with backline amps. When I play, let's say, somewhere that I have friends around, or you know, like when I was playing some shows in Europe. Sometimes like a friend comes and bring like a vintage amp or something really cool. Mm-hmm. Oh, even in Brazil, like I had people bringing me Turox and, you know, but when that is not possible, I ask for Fender Twin, mm-hmm. The backline. The reason for that is not because I like those amps. I don't like them at all, to be honest. I mean, if, I think if it's something vintage, it's going to be amazing. But the real thing is those amps from backlines, they are so like, they've been on the road all the time. It, you know, usually it's very hard to have the reverb working. Mm-hmm. So what I usually ask is two twins. And when they say, no, we just have one. I said, no, but I run two at the same time. But it's just a lie. I only go with one. Oh. But then when they bring both, I try both, see which one has the reverb working or which one is sounding
That's smart.
Better. Yeah. So that's why I do. But the reason I ask for those amps, it's because at least it's 100 watts and at least it's loud. Because right. I like clean headroom. That's what I like.
Yeah. And that's a super clean platform for yeah. for you to be running a fuzz through.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And I hear a lot of people that play fuzz pedals that they like the amp, like the edge of breakup, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Do you think the fuzz sound better? I disagree. I think the fuzz sound better if you play loud.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah. And then when I play clean loud, it sounds amazing. Actually, when I play dirty and loud and then I add the fuzz, I don't like it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. For me, it's Voxes and, you know, super clean platform and and then just send a lot of dirt through it and then crank it up. Yeah. I'm with you all the way. So, you know, everybody knows that you're originally from Brazil. Mm-hmm. And I always ask this question. I ask this question of almost every guest that I have on, because for me, it's fascinating because I grew up in New York and we had New York radio and we were, at that time, we were a mecca for bands and clubs and the music scene was vibrant. It's dead now. But it was really, really vibrant, and it was just the best time to be an up-and-coming musician or learning your craft, and it was just great. And I really believe that geography has a lot to do with the maturation of a musician, and not only the direction, genre, and all that stuff, but the notes that they'll end up picking.
I totally agree. Yeah.
So what was the geography like for you?
So for me, growing up, it was the vibe of a city.
Yeah.
Because it's a big city, my hometown. I think it's, I don't know right now, but I think it's one of the top five biggest cities in Brazil. But at the same time, it's the poorest area in Brazil. I'm not saying that my city is completely poor, it's not what I'm saying, but comparing with the rest of Brazil, it's where the economy, it's a little bit lower than the average, and also it's close to the ocean, my hometown. Mm. So I had the vibe of the big city, but at the same time, the ocean is right there. Mm-hmm. At the time that I was growing up as a guitar player, it was still the time that you learn that there was no YouTube to help you. You have to buy magazines or meet with a friend, teach me this, teach me that, or learn by ear. And that's what I did. I learned everything by ear. And so I think that influences a lot the way you play. I think for the best, to be honest, mm-hmm. because technology and internet is amazing for a lot of things. But on the other hand, kind of makes everyone a little bit like lazy or... Mm-hmm. Or sounding very similar.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, Yeah, I agree. So it's almost like it's like, you know, oh well, this is just we're kind of just rubber stamping everything. Everybody's coming out the same way because they all learn from the same YouTube video. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
As opposed to something like, you know, like some of the stuff that you, like I know that you've worked at you were a teacher at MI mm-hmm. in Hollywood, and so that's face to face stuff. But you also had online courses with True Fire. We've had the president of True Fire on, and Jam Play and stuff like that. Those things to me are a lot more, what's the word I'm looking for? Substantial, than, you know, going and saying, okay, well, here's a YouTube guy who is, you know, selling lessons, but it doesn't have that same personality. It doesn't have that same hands-on, no pun intended, approach to it. Do you know what I'm saying? That's what I get. I can see that. Like I've seen clips of some of the True Fire stuff that you've done, and I'm like, yeah, that's good. That makes sense. That's the way to bring it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, what I think everybody that becomes a teacher, I'm an artist, but I also have that side of teaching as well. I think everybody that becomes a teacher, they become the teacher that they wish they had.
Yeah.
So the way I teach is like, damn, if when I was growing up a virtual player, if I had somebody telling me this, I would be already in another level. So I kind of like teaching with that mindset.
Yeah.
That's the way I like teaching, yeah.
Yeah.
But then you asked about how the city, how the environment.
Yeah, how is
the play, right?
Yeah.
So when I moved to São Paulo, which is the biggest city in Brazil, mm-hmm. it's the Brazilian New York. It's like it has everything. It's such a cool city, you know. It has everything with music, with food, with culture, everything. So when I moved there, my playing changed as well. I was playing more frenetic. And then at that time I had the realization, I said, oh, so it makes sense, Charlie Parker and the bebop in New York. And then that's why they were playing like fast like that. And like, because it feels like you have to keep moving because there's a lot of competition and everything moves fast. And you kind of, you know, that if you are in a small city, small town, or living in the nature or close to the ocean, you kind of play more laid back, you play less, you're more, it's like you're playing, it has to do with how you feel inside, you know?
Yeah.
In a big city, you're kind of more probably worried about paying the bills, or there's a lot of anxieties and stuff. When you're in a small town, it's like my peace of mind, everybody's more relaxed, and then it reflects on your playing.
That totally makes sense. Absolutely. And it's interesting that you brought up Bird. You know, I never thought about that before, that frenetic energy in the playing. And it makes sense. It's sort of like, you know, there's buses, there's subways, there's taxis, and all this stuff is happening all at once. And there's this edge, you know. And I remember that growing up in New York, how that was, you know, that was like that. Do you remember... Do you remember Joe Jackson? He did Is She Really Going Out with him? And she did that. He did that song Stepping Out. And it was a song about New York.
Not sure. Probably I heard this song, but I'm very bad with names.
He did this thing where he was living in New York. And this was back in the days of cassettes. And he was walking around just record. He would just walk around the streets recording the sounds of the city. Mm-hmm. And then he would go home, take the recorder, put the tape on, lay it on, they put it on the piano, and just play it back, and he would play along to the sounds that he heard. And he wrote a whole album around that. And I was like,
wow, that's amazing.
Isn't that cool? I think that's such a great idea. And so you made me think of that when you mentioned Bird and the whole idea of the freneticism of it all. That totally makes sense. And, you know, you moving from a smaller city to a big city that is moving at a different pace, it's obviously going to change the energetic component of your playing. Yeah, mm-hmm. Very cool. That is
yeah,
really
yeah.
cool.
Yeah, playing an instrument, like, I mean, any form of expression with art, it's. I mean, let's playing a guitar is not only about muscle memory and scales and notes. It's so much more involved.
Yeah.
Yeah, so much more involved.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's super cool. So here we are. We're in the pretty much in the beginning of 2024, and you're going to be hitting the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, what do you got planned?
So we have two tours planned for Europe. Not sure yet when the second it's going to be, but probably around summer. Mm-hmm. But that's gonna. It's gonna happen based on what it's gonna be happening in the U.S. If I have like cool gigs here or some tours here, right. Maybe I'm not gonna go to Europe. I'm gonna do like shorter.
Right.
But I have one now coming up in March. It's a three weeks tour. I don't remember right now all the countries, but I'm sure there's France, there's Greece, there's. I'm not sure.
And you're going to be you'll be listing that on your website, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay,
definitely.
So folks, when you go to guitarradioshow.com, there'll be a link to Artur's website right there, and you'll be able to find all the tour dates there. So
yes.
just go right there. There'll also be the video that I shot over in Dallas of him playing as well.
Cool. Nice. So there's Brazil as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be May.
Okay.
Yeah, I would have to check that because we're still like in the
planning.
Work in progress. Yeah. Planning.
Yeah.
There is also something in the Midwest because I just got signed by Reliant Agency.
Mm-hmm.
And they're starting to organize my tours in the U.S. So that's that. And... recently, I released my signature pickups, so I'm also going to be now at NAMM in Anaheim, here in California.
Yeah.
It's the NAMM show you heard about.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to be there promoting those pickups and, yeah, basically that's in working on new songs.
And working on new tunes, yeah.
To record again.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to big time. So I was going to actually ask you, because you said you were thinking about Brazil in May. Probably won't see you in Dallas this year then.
Yeah, maybe not. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we always.
I would love to. I would love to.
Well, we always look forward to seeing you in Texas. It's great having you here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man, this is, you know, I knew, you know, when I watch you play, I see you get lost in it all. You become, it's like you can't tell where you end and the guitar begins,
mm-hmm.
You know. And when I watch you play, I say that, I go, look, there's somebody, there's a musician. He's not just a guitar player. He's mm-hmm. he's a musician, and he's somebody that is, he's one with his music. And when somebody's one with their music, that's somebody I want to talk to. And I knew that you were going to give us this kind of information today.
Mm-hmm.
So I greatly appreciate you doing that.
Sure. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what happens is, here's something very interesting that I'm going to tell you. So let's say I play a show tonight and tomorrow, the next day, somebody posts a video on YouTube and then I'm going to go watch.
Right.
Not because I'm narcissist or anything like that, but I'd like to see what I'm doing to learn from mistakes and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So when I see something that I don't like, let's say, oh, I don't like what I just did. He's this phrasing or whatever. I remember exactly what I was thinking at the time I was playing that. I remember, when I played that, I was thinking about next day about paying bills or about checking in for the next flight or about buying cat food for my cat or, you know, like stuff like that. Like, or even something like, is the audience enjoying the show? Should I play something faster to see if I got their attention?
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So then I... usually when I hear something I don't like it, I remember exactly what I was thinking about. But then when I see something I like, oh my God, what is this? I don't remember doing that. And I don't remember thinking anything when I was doing that. So that's the thing. So when you are in the moment, you kind of really, really present, you're not thinking.
Yeah.
You're just being.
Yes.
By being, you're playing really honest, and it's from your heart, and it's something not because you are trying to impress, not because you are trying to call the attention of the audience. It's just because you're just being you at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, that's what I do. So one thing that I've been working a lot, that actually not recently. Recently, I'm kind of not really on top of that, but I used to meditate a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I start doing meditations. That's when my playing really changed. Like really, really changed. It became really more emotional and more real. And the audience, they know that. Mm-hmm. I, when I'm in the audience, I can't tell if the player is playing from his heart,
yeah.
His head, his mind, or his heart.
Yeah.
I can definitely tell just by being there in the moment, just, or even listening, or even looking, but just listening. People can tell that. Yeah,
absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Yeah, absolutely. It's so true. The you can see, you can feel, and hear the fluidity of it all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
But sometimes it's very hard to not be all the time in your, to not be in the mind, like. For a long time, it's very hard. Inside your head, it's very hard. And, you know, everybody goes through that. It's like we always have mm-hmm. those internal voices, like, am I good enough? Do people like me? Or should I be doing this differently? You know, you have all those things. Everybody has that.
Everybody.
But, but at the same time, it's not really that bad. So let's say when I do that mistake because I play something, I don't like it, because I was thinking about something else, even though I don't like it, it's still who I am. It's, you know, I played that because I was anxious, because that's the moment it's a portrait of what I was in that moment. So it's also cool too, you know?
Yeah.
It's better when you're playing really from your heart all the time, but even if you're not, you're just being human as well. So
mm-hmm.
that's it, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's super cool that you go and do that you go and you check in on yourself. And
mm-hmm.
and look at it, and yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
That's... I wouldn't say that I watch the entire show, but I go like 2 minutes or something like that because I get tired. Yeah, I get tired of myself. Yeah. Can't see this anymore. I don't like it. I'm gone.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. Well, Artur, I can't thank you enough for spending some time with us today, man. I appreciate it.
Of course, of course. My pleasure.
This was great. If you could pick one tune for us to go out on from AMFM, which one would you pick?
I think it would go with Time. It's the less commercial one because it's super long, but it's very psychedelic. It talks about, you know, it talks about death and the kind of stuff that everyone, it's going to experience one day, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's no escape from that, and it's really cool. I like the lyrics, I like the vibe, I like the tones, I like the solo, you know. There's a lot of fuzz and uni vibe. I like the song. Yeah.
Right on. Well, that's what we're gonna do. Well,
thank
you again, sir. And you hold on, but we're gonna sign off right here.
Sounds great. Thank you. You
Radio Show on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, GuitarRadioShow.com, and anywhere you get your podcasts. Find Guitar Radio Show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And remember, if you like the artists you hear on Guitar Radio Show, don't just stream their music, buy it.
GRS Productions.